Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to QSO. It's all about ham radio. I'm Ted Randall, and this is an unusual show in that the day before the Huntsville Ham Fest had a bright idea. Why not do an oldies show in the lobby of the Embassy Suites Saturday night after the Ham Fest and invite everybody to come along and sit down and talk and tell stories and tales? Just build a campfire in the lobby of the Embassy Suites and just have a big informal time and everyone have fun. Well, we made the announcement, and that's exactly what we did, and that's what this broadcast is. So stay tuned. Here it comes on QSO.
And a song called You Showed Me, but we're not going to tell you what they showed you, okay? Hey, we are live. As crazy as this sounds, we are live from the Embassy Suites in Huntsville, Alabama. And we are on 5085 kilohertz. And with me is Tom, W5KUB, who is the other partner in crime here, along with Bob Allison. He's here from Connecticut. And
hi, folks.
Yeah, and his mic's a little low, so I don't know what that. I just realized it. Get up there a little bit closer. Say hi, folks.
Hey,
again.
Here. How you doing there?
One
Bob
more
here. WB1GCM.
Up a little closer.
These are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
These are Heil microphones. They don't have built-in batteries.
Okay.
So.
Yep.
All right. There we go. Tom.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you tonight?
Oh, well, I don't know. We're here playing oldies in the lobby of the hotel. And if you're listening right now, be sure and send us some email. The email address is simply email at WTWW.us. And I'm going to have Holly here checking our emails here shortly to see what transpires. Well, we're down here for the Ham Fest, and we're just, I say down here, I mean, there's folks that came from Florida. I'm sure they say they were coming up here for the Ham Fest. So I guess my question is, has everyone had a good time so far, or are Tom, are you and Bob miserable, or have you had a good time?
You know, I'll tell you, the Ham Fest looks very large this year. Their attendance is normally about 5,000. I'm hearing people estimating it upwards to about 8,000. And it's very crowded. A lot of people there. We're seeing a lot of people we know, our friends, and meeting new people. And, of course, we're doing a webcast, a live webcast on video on W5KB.com. And it's hard for us to get around and show the stuff. It's so crowded. So we're having a good time, but we're really tired tonight, Ted.
All right. Well, the gentleman just joined us. I want to say welcome to Martin Jew. And I want you to grab that microphone and talk to the folks right quick. We're on 5085. Now, remember, when you're talking into that mic, you're modulating a 100,000-watt shortwave transmitter. So,
whoa. So what does that mean? So I should talk very softly, or don't talk too loud, or talk very loud?
Well, it's all in what you're trying to do. You know, you remember on the licenses, it used to say, if you're in a high noise area, the correct answer was something like cup your hands over the microphone, you know, to avoid the background noise. Well, have you been having fun here?
Well, I guess it depends on how you defined it. If you define fun as 8 drinks, then I would say I have been having fun.
Okay. Well, you know, you've got, I think you have the absolute, I mean, of all the displays, you guys bring more stuff with you. I don't know, unless I'm just not getting around. I mean, it looks to me like you have more stuff with you than just about anybody as far as at the Ham Fest.
Well, all we need to do right now is sell some of it.
There you go. Well, I don't think you'd have a whole lot of trouble with that, because I think folks come around, they look at all the things that you have, and they're fixing us up here with another table. So I couldn't figure out what was going on. I'm watching. I'm saying, what's happening here? You know.
Oh, these guys have been very, very nice. and one of the managers, come over here. Can I get him to say something?
Sure.
On 100,000-watt shortwave station all over the world, one of my favorite guys here in Huntsville, Alabama. Come here and say something.
Welcome to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Huntsville, Alabama. We're sounds like y'all have had a great time so far and excited that you're here. And you've been here several years now and looking forward to you next year, hopefully, too.
Oh, yeah.
So y'all enjoy. It's a great group. We look forward to you coming in.
Thank you much, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So anyhow, what do you think? What do you think we ought to do to try to help sell a whole bunch of this product you got here? And we can talk on the radio about it. So what I figured that maybe what we might could do is talk about what a good time folks have on ham radio. And
well, let me tell you what I think we ought to talk about.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Oh, no. I think our fellow hams would really be interested in it because, you know, when I was 16 years old, the average age of hams were 16 years old. When I got to be 30 years old, the average age of hams were 30 years old. When I got to be 50 years old, the average age of ham was 50 years old. Now, the average we are the average age of hams, and we all love to recreate the beginning of our ham radio career when we were novice. Let's talk about what it was like when we were novices back in those early days when we had separate receiver and little transmitter we built or we bought and built from Heathkit, and when we had dipole antennas that we thought were dipole antennas and fed with TV twin leads, and we had to have a TR switch, which was a manual switch, and you had to flip the switch on your receiver to make sure you wouldn't have that howling sound, and sometimes you wouldn't forget to do that. I think that would be a very fun subject to talk about.
Well, I don't know. Let me ask you this. How many here remember their novice days?
Oh, yes.
Okay. We're good to go. Now, let me say this. Novice, 75 watts input power. All I ever operated was the 80 and 40. I don't even remember what the novice band was on 40. You know, it was 3,700 to 3,750 on the 80-meter band. And I'd get in from school or whatnot, and the first thing I would do was head to the rig with a telegraph key. And all I had on my mind was collecting cards to put on the wall. And I didn't know where they come from. I mean, if they were just across town, it was a card to collect. That was it. And I wanted that card. And that was more fun. And I miss that, I guess you would say, that novice band, because I had all the confidence in the world when I got on there. I wasn't going to get somebody going 30 words a minute. You know,
hey, man, I understand exactly what you're saying. Oh, yeah. The novice band, you knew somebody could send at the rate that you could copy, and they were just as bad as sending as you were.
And you know, Martin, we were all crystal control, and nobody had the same crystals.
Oh,
you know,
man.
I had two crystals, maybe. You may have had three crystals, and we were all on different frequencies, but we still were able to talk to each other.
Oh, man, you know, back in those days, you were on one frequency, and everybody tuned around, you know, around that point, so they would listen for you, and they would find you. You would be able to talk to them. I mean, those were great days. And, you know, 75 watt, that was input power, right? That was the FCC limit. Well, you know, if you go through and look at all the magazine articles, you know, back then the tubes that were available to make transmitters, you know, you couldn't get the standard power that you have today, which is 100 watts. Hardly anybody ever had more than 10, 15, 20, 30 watts. So with 10, 15, 20, 30 watts, you could talk all over the world. Hardly anybody ever was able to transmit 100 watts of output power. So we're talking about 6L6s, 6V6s, 6AG7s, those kind of tubes. And the 6146 tube didn't come out until the transceivers were available. Tom, you were going to say something.
Well, I was going to say, you know, back then you may have had a lot more equipment than me, Martin, but how did you know how much power you're really running? We didn't have watt meters. We didn't have SWR meters. You know, hey, it's a, what, plate voltage times a plate current, and, you know, you kind of guessed what you're putting out, you know?
No, you're right. I mean, all we need, I mean, FCC only regulated input power. You're right. You could only, I mean, you would just guess, like, 50% efficient. So I remember that the transmitter that I had, which was homemade out of TV parts, 22 watts input power. So at 50% efficiency, you're only getting about 10, 11 watts. You could work all over the world. And this is back in the days when you had crystals and plug-in coils and a receiver. And the first receiver I had was a regenerative receiver.
Yeah, you know, in the antennas, I mean, I know I had a dipole up. I'm trying to think. I didn't have too many different bands operated because I didn't have that much. I don't think I had all the antennas up like I do now. You know, when you're 16 years old, you just pull up, you know, one or two antennas, hope your parents don't think it looks bad. But I'm thinking, you know, back then in 1964, I got used coax. It probably came from World War II. It was probably 20 years, 30 years old, you know, 40 years old. And, I put that up, cut my dipole, didn't have an SWR meter. I don't even remember how I got the length. I guess I used a formula out of the book or something. But, you know, no SWR meter. Sometimes we would tune up. Our dummy load was a 100-watt light bulb, and we would tune up with that light. And, you know, now knowing what I know, I don't see how things worked back then, but we had fun. I've had water come down my coax when I was 16-year-old, running into the room like it was coming down a pipe, you know. It was coming out the end of the coax.
Well, you know, after all these years, we are trying to recreate the experience that we had when we were novices. We go out and go on eBay and buy all these radios just to create that moment that we had when we made our first contact. I mean, it was just incredible. And I remember when I had my station up in the attic of the old grocery store that we lived in, and I would have a logbook full of CQ, 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 CQ.
You had to log all that.
No answer.
Then,
yeah. You had to log every transmission. Every transmission.
Yep.
All CQs, no answer, no answer, no answer, no answer.
Had a lot of those, too.
Oh, man. Those were great days.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, I started out with a Heathkit DX60B, and talk about recreating your novice station. I did just that at the ARL lab on my own bench. I have my original novice transmitter I built. I learned how to solder with the DX60B, a Heathkit. It was a kit. You put it all together. And that, I had originally a Radio Shack receiver. And that Radio
Which
Shack...
Which one was that? DX150?
Yeah, DX150B.
Oh, wow.
And Martin, that receiver was so wide. It was wider than a barn door. So it seemingly you had 5 CW signals coming in at once. And you had to listen for that one that was talking back to you. And so that made me a good operator. I had to pick out between all the other signals. That and a knife switch for a TR switch.
Oh, okay.
And all that. And but I made contacts, and I got those QSO cards on the wall. And it was a marvelous thing. It was so cool. I started out with a CB set, but I went to a class in my town of Glastonbury, Connecticut, took that novice class. And once I got that novice license, I gladly handed in that Morse code key for that CB microphone. Forget the CB. I got ham radio now, and life was great. And 41 years later.
We got some folks here that have written in. They want us to do
shout-outs. I do a lot of shout-outs on Saturday nights when I'm playing oldies, and even though we're talking, Don, we do a lot of I'm going to let Tom do the shout-outs. Say hello to those.
Okay, we'll say hello to Scott. He's in Lake Worth, Florida. And let's see, where's Lake Worth? You know where Lake Worth is?
I have no idea.
It's in Florida somewhere. We got Brett in Kansas City, Missouri. That's supposed to be great barbecue there, but I think Memphis has got them beat.
I
got a story about that a little later in an astronaut and the barbecue we'll talk about if we have time. And then John out in Fresno, California. Hello, John.
Hey, John.
So I want to say thanks to all of you folks. Once again, well, you were happy to acknowledge you. Be a little difficult to play a request tonight, but we can say hello. So just give us a shout at email at WTWW.us. That's email at WTWW.us, wherever you're listening. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, I didn't want to interrupt, but let's just continue on here. You talk about crystal control.
Oh, yes. 3716, my first crystal.
So, Did you ever try grinding on a crystal?
Let me jump in on that, grinding a crystal. You know, there was this deal, you open that crystal up and you take toothpaste, wasn't it toothpaste, and you kind of file that quartz down in there. And I know some people even put a screw in here to make it variable. What did you do, Martin?
No. What happened when you tried to grind your crystal down?
I don't think I ever did it, man.
Oh, no, I did that.
Oh, did you?
There were two things that you could do. You could grind it down. When I did that, my crystal quit working.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Now that's how you raise the frequency. If you wanted to lower the frequency, which was a safer thing to do, you would take the crystal apart. These were FT-243s.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Yeah. What you would do is you would take a pencil, and you would just mark on it, and it would lower the frequency a little bit on that.
If you overshot it while grinding,
yeah, you could just erase it.
Yeah.
But let me talk a little bit about a TR switch. You know, when you did the TR switch, you had to manually do it.
That's right.
I mean, you either had a switch or you took an alligator clip and you clipped it from one antenna to the other antenna.
Yep. I had a double throw knife switch.
Knife switch.
I got
it
at the hardware store.
Oh man, this guy, he was a deluxe guy.
I think I started off with a relay. I didn't go with the manual. I put some voltage to a relay to switch it, you know. And then, you know, I said, that's not very modern. So, Martin, I'm a home brewer, and I built a TR switch, a transmit-receive switch. It was a little device. It wasn't very big, but it had a tube in it. And I'm thinking back, something like a 12AU7 or something in there. And you didn't have to do any switching. It was automatic. It was great for break-in, you know. The antenna was always hooked to the transmitter. It was always hooked to the receiver. And that little TR switch would just block the signal from getting into the receiver. Now, it probably cut my receiver down, too, but, well, you know, yeah, who knows.
Johnson made a switch just like that.
Well, Tom, you know, you really had a really high-tech switch, TR switch. I want to talk about my TR switch, but just give me a second while I squeeze my lime into my Grey Goose.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I want to talk about my TR switch. Do y'all remember back in those days, coffee cans, you used to have to use a little key, like a sardine can key, to open a coffee can, you would have the top of a coffee can. Okay. Yep. Well, on that coffee can, you could use it like a chassis and build something. Well, I built a TR switch made up of a Christmas tree light bulb and a pair of diodes, and you would connect it up, just like you said, on a TR switch. The antenna was always connected to the transmitter. Then you came off of that and go to your receiver. What the Christmas tree light bulb did was, when you transmitted, it lit up and it became a very high resistance, and it would protect the receiver, and then the pair of diodes would keep the receiver from burning out. So that was an automatic TR switch that was built on the the lid of a coffee tin, and they worked great. My little S-40 helicopter receiver worked for a long time.
You must have been real poor to have to use a coffee can, Martin. Let me tell you, I never done nothing like that, but I used a sardine can in ham radio. There was an article to build a 2-meter antenna using a sardine can. You turn that can upside down, mount a SO239 in it, screw your little 19-inch whip on it, and you solder that tuna can down on top of about a 7-inch square piece of copper. You lay it on top of your car, and you put duct tape on it. And that makes, you know, your capacitive coupling to the car, and that was our first 2-meter antenna, sardine can.
That's great.
What color were your Christmas lights?
It was clear.
Okay.
You know, I recall there was some article in QST years ago that was called the Tuna 2. Now, so was the Tuna 2 that antenna, or was the Tuna 2 something else?
Oh, the Tuna 10-2 was a QRP transmitter for 40 meters that W1FB, Doug DeMond built.
Yeah. Okay, so now it was a Tuna 10-2.
Yeah, that came out in May 1976, and Doug DeMond was a QRP enthusiast, and he pretty much taught everybody that you can work the world on less power than it takes to light a flashlight. But I will give Martin over here credit, because he actually came out with a QRP transmitter a year earlier in 1975 that I owned. My first MFJ product was a 40-meter crystal-controlled 5-watt CW solid-state transmitter, and I used this little small 40-meter 5-watt transmitter on our sailboat with that Radio Shack receiver.
Wow.
And, of course, part of the rigging, the backstay, was the antenna, and I brought an antenna tuner, and I made contacts with this little lash-up.
Wow.
Much to my parents' dismay, because I had wires going everywhere, and I was clacking in the middle of the night with a Morse code key, but that was my fun and love. But that's actually about a year before the Tuna 10-2.
Wow. Now, when I said we were going to do oldies tonight and talk, that's what we're doing. we're telling stories that are oldies, are we not, Martin?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, one of the things that I have been doing recently in the last several months is to restore and build old novice radio stations of the 1960s and late 50s. Things like the DX20, the AT1. You know, there was a pair of what was called a Connor twins put out by the National Radio Institute.
Yep.
Yeah, oh, man. I mean, those were absolutely the worst receiver and transmitters you could have.
Oh, that was a pitiful single-tube transmitter that would whoop, whoop,
yeah,
whoop, whoop, whoop,
absolutely.
Whoop, whoop.
But, it's great fun to be able to make a contact with that. I mean, people could hear you. They just didn't want to talk to you.
Email at WTWW.us is our email address. And I think Tom's got some more folks. We're just going to say hello. We're not going to try to play songs tonight.
All right.
So, okay. Just tell us where you're listening from.
Let's see. We got Ron out in Tupelo, Mississippi. Shortwave station's doing good tonight. It's making it out of Mississippi.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And then we've got Marvin, Santa Rosa, California. Clarence is in Lexington, Kentucky. We got Jeremy there, New Berlin, Wisconsin. It even goes north, Ted. The signal goes north.
The antenna spins, you know.
And then we've got William in Jensen Beach, Florida. Hey, Ted, just real quick, you've got a rhombic antenna on that thing. Do you know which way it's aimed tonight?
No, it's always east-west. We're right here
east-west.
In the middle of
okay.
Tennessee, and it goes east-west, so we get east coast and we get west coast. We got really good
coverage. And a little bit of a bleed over to the north and south, so you cover the whole United States.
Really? Yeah, and we're up into Canada. We get people up in Canada writing and listening to. The signal's pretty good there. And then we also get reports from the Caribbean and down into South America, Mexico especially, you know. So, you know, an unterminated rhombic is kind of a magic antenna, really, when you get right down to it. Of course, when you terminate it, Martin can give you the technical things that happen when you terminate it. But we'd like to go in more than one direction and still have some gain, you know. That's the why behind that. We're talking about grinding crystals. I can tell you I did this once at a broadcast station. I think we were on 560. I can't remember which way it was. And the original crystal, I think, was 550. So I think what that meant was is I had to shave it a little bit, you know. And I got so close, but just not quite. And what would happen at night, you could always hear a heterodyne on that radio station because it was just slightly off frequency. Never said anything to anybody about it. No one ever caught on, so, you know. But the problem was we need to get on the air and trying to get a crystal somewhere. Well, then we had a flood in Nashville, and the BBN station, Bible Broadcasting Network, had a transmitter right down by the river. Their whole transmitter building went completely underwater.
Wow.
So the boys and I got our McMartin, which had 4-400A's in it, two modulator tubes and two finals, got it down by the river, hooked it up, and we had the same problem. You know, where am I going to find a crystal? So I looked at the frequency, and I can't remember what it was, but I thought, heck, a ham transceiver will put a carrier out there. So I grabbed a Yaesu 757 and piped the output of it into the transmitter, and it was fine. It was stable, and it ran perfectly. So, but I don't know. We weren't allowed VFOs as novices. You couldn't just simply put a VFO on. You had to.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO, and what you're listening to is a big old campfire in the lobby of the Embassy Suites in Huntsville, Alabama, that followed the Huntsville Ham Fest. So you'll just have to stay tuned and listen. Now, we're going to get right back to this, and we'll tell you more about it right after this. Here at QSO, we hear success story after success story. We hear excited people telling us they just got their ticket using Ham Test Online. That's right. This is the easiest, most concise, as well as fastest method to get that ticket in your hand. Ham Test Online. No thick books to read, no DVDs, no CDs to wade through, no studying for hours and hours and then forgetting what you studied, and no irrelevant information that you have to wade through in order to get to the things that are really on the test. Ham Test Online. Now, if you've already upgraded to Extra Class and you no longer need the services of Ham Test Online, we want you to think about this. Ham it forward. That's right. Ham it forward. Now, what is that? There's a lot of folks out there that would like to Elmer someone into the hobby, but you're not quite sure how to do it. Don't know if you could really tackle the project. There's folks out there that would like to teach a class of maybe three or four people or maybe larger, but you see that as a real undertaking. Don't know if you can quite handle that. Working with someone and getting them their ham ticket is one of the most satisfying things that you could do as a radio amateur and promote this hobby, moving it forward with new blood. That's why we have Ham It Forward. Now, this is a cooperative effort from Amateur Radio Roundtable, the QSO radio show, and the folks at Ham Test Online. All you have to do is get a subscription for a new prospective ham, and then just follow through with them a little bit and let Ham Test Online take them through the steps and get their ticket painlessly, easy, and fun. Keep this in mind. It's a new program. We're calling it Ham It Forward. We'd love for you to participate in this. Everybody knows someone that they would love to get into the hobby. Give a gift. Give the gift of the ham radio, amateur radio hobby by Ham It Forward. Go to hamtestonline.com. That's hamtestonline.com. Or look on the QSOradioshow.com website. How about a very, very selective and very sensitive portable shortwave radio that you can fit in the palm of your hand? That's right, a shortwave radio that's got also a very hot AM section on it, picking up distant AM stations that you wouldn't know were there, an FM receiver that's really nice, an FM stereo built in, the aircraft band, so you can listen to the control tower and the pilots coming in, And also, of course, a very hot shortwave. Shortwave receiver that receives from 2.3 to 26 megahertz continuous with variable audio bandwidth switching. How about also NOAA weather included on this radio? That's right. You can hold it in the palm of your hand. It's not much bigger than a pack of cigarettes. It's called the SkyWave. We've been talking about this. And if you're a shortwave listener, you just can't live without one of these things. 400 memories. It comes with the power adapter, the earbuds. It's got a USB connector on the side for charging batteries, and it'll go 60, 70 hours on a pair of AA batteries. Is this all true? Yes, it is. We've accused Bob Crane of using voodoo to create this radio. Why don't you give the Sea Crane Company a call? But before you do, mention WTWW, and you'll get the free retractable shortwave antenna that you can attach to the radio through a jack on the side and extend the antenna way out, or you can get the CC quick charger, which is a battery charger that it charges AA, AAA, CD, shows you the status of the battery, shuts off automatically when it's fully charged, and you can charge all your USB devices with this thing, including your cell phone. That can be free as well. It depends on what you want. Do you want the antenna or do you want the CC quick charger? All you got to do is mention WTWW. Now, why is that important? Because the folks at Sea Crane want to know where the orders are coming from, because they're the ones that's bringing you the Art Bell Show on shortwave. And for them to continue this effort of this wonderful thing of midnight in the desert on a big, powerful shortwave radio station, they just want to know that you're patronizing them by ordering your shortwave radios from them. This SkyWave is unbelievable. You can get a hold of the Sea Crane Company by dialing 1-800-522-TUNE. That's 1-800-522-TUNE or 1-800-522-8863. It's 1-800-522-8863. And mention WTWW. Or you can simply go to seacrane.com. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com and send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the QSO Radio Show, and we're bringing you a playback of a live broadcast we did on WTWW at the Embassy Suites in Huntsville, Alabama. It was a last-minute idea to have an oldies show in the lobby of the Embassy Suites Saturday night following the Ham Fest and just have everyone gather around and tell stories and have a big time. Well, guess what? We didn't get a chance to play any oldies because the stories were just too good. So let's continue. Right now, you don't want to miss a minute of this broadcast from the Huntsville Ham Fest Embassy Suites Saturday night.
Figure out a way. You know, I'm just wondering, though, when was the beginning of like, frequency synthesizers? Because I remember we went through a little bit of that. We had where you have little thumb wheels and you could dial up whatever frequency you wanted. Do you know any history about that, Martin, where they came from?
Well, I don't know the exact history of it, but I do remember where you had to use thumb wheels to set each digit for the frequency and I think most of that in the beginning started off on the 2 meter band with the Heath kit. I forgot what that was called.
2036 mobile
rig. 2036. Yeah. You had to, you know, do like this to get set it to the frequency that you want.
I still got some of those radios, and they're easier to work than the ones today to set the frequency.
That's true. But the Clegg FM-27 Bravo.
Yeah.
That was like one of the first, if not the first, available synthesized radios, and it had knobs. It didn't have thumb wheels.
Yeah, you didn't use thumb wheels. You just turned knobs into a big square box.
And these knobs, the transmitter output of this transceiver was very rich in harmonics. So I've been told by a number of radio amateurs that when they had their their FM 27 Bravo on the air. They were keying up a number of repeaters in their city all at once. So it had its problems from the start, but they fixed that.
Well, you know, if you key up a whole lot of repeaters, you could get a whole lot more contacts that way.
Yeah, it's kind of like D-Star or DMR today. I mean, the Clegg was ahead of its time.
We got somebody writing in. Is that for Tom?
Yeah.
Okay.
Andrew sent us a note, KD5PUR, is that right, Holly?
Yep.
He said he had a rig with 6146s in it. Let me see the note here. Okay, 1958 Viking 2. He had a pair of 6146s.
That's right. Yep.
1958, that was pretty early for 6146s. Actually, I'm thinking, I don't know.
Where's that fella at?
It was.
Andrew, I forget where you are. Send us another email. Tell us where you are. I kind of think he's over in Arkansas or somewhere.
What's the call sign?
I may be wrong. KD5PUR.
You know, 6146 is what made the 100-watt radios. You know, they started off in the TS520s, the FT101s, and
HW101.
And man,
even back in the kit, the T150, the night kit, remember those?
Yeah. T150s, yeah. Man, that was the beginning of the 100-watt radios.
We just handed a microphone to a gentleman over here. Why don't you give your call sign and tell us who you are?
My name is Frank Howell, Kilo 4 Fox Mike Hotel. And I'm a late in life ham. I've been listening since I was 8 years old. I'm 62. But I only became licensed in 2010. So how many of you around here know what a mushmouth is?
A mushmouth
was what the old AMers on 75 meters called those silly sidebenders. So I've been listening a long time, even though I've not been a licensed ham for a long time. But I think the love and magic of radio capture somebody when they first hear those things that you can't see with your naked eyes in the air. As a small kid, I went to visit a friend of mine who was a lifelong friend. His name's Keith. We fished an old Gillette double-sided razor blade out of the trash can, used some little Litz wire. I didn't know it was Litz wire, but that's what it was. And we made a detector on that razor blade, and I will not to this day reveal that there was a lot of toilet paper on the bathroom floor because somebody needed the roll to make a tuning coil. And we listened to the Georgia Tech Vanderbilt football game on that little crystal homemade sort of foxhole radio. And from that moment on, I was bitten by the radio bug. And I've been an avid shortwave listener and DXer, but got licensed in 2010. I spend my time working voluntarily for the Delta Division of ARRL and do a little book editing for Springer Media. But I enjoy listening to some of these, at least stories from the older days.
It goes to prove that it's never too late to become a radio amateur, no matter what.
Never too late. Your detector on the end of the did you use a safety pin?
Did not use a safety pin, but I used some little fine wire, and it took a long time with some tweezers to find the greenest spot on that Gillette razor, so it would actually detect that signal. And my friend's father was a civil engineer with the Georgia Highway Department, and he was watching that football game on television. And my friend Keith went running in to bother him. Hey, we've got it on the radio out here. And he said, "I'll go away, Keith. I'm watching the football game." And when he finally came out and put the little earplug from an old transistor radio that my brother had, that I happened to confiscate the earpiece, we never got the earpiece back because he stayed with that crystal radio rather than go back with the TV set.
Well, some of those, they get a little safety pin, and then you take a pencil lead.
Yeah, pencil lead.
And take the wire and wrap the pencil lead around the safety pin. You know, and I remember doing that, and then you'd have to move it back and forth. You didn't have a Galena crystal. You're going back and forth on this razor blade, you know.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, you know, you'd get something coming
in. You could hear something.
Hey, you know what? Martin told me a story. That was one of the first radios Martin built, was the razor blade radio. Martin, you remember the story you told me? How did your radio work out?
Well, I did exactly what Ted was talking about. You know, you take a piece of wire, wrap it around a pencil lead. You put it on old rusty razor blade to make a crystal radio. Well, my radio, I could never get that thing to work.
That's the story I was wanting you to tell, Roger. See if you told me the same story as last time. You never got it to work.
You know, if we're talking about some old stuff, we got a guy here tonight that had some stuff that whole house full, yard full of radios from World War II, but not just radios, but a tank, a real tank in his front yard. Can I hand the microphone over to my friend John Whitten and for him to talk about the tank?
Well, actually, it's not a tank. I'm John Whitten, W5JWW. It's a armored personnel carrier, and it's British, and it weighs 33,000 pounds. The reason I don't have a tank is they weigh 52 tons, and I couldn't figure out how to get it to my house without having a gravel road where the asphalt road used to be. So I collect and restore old military vehicles and a bunch of old radios. So I've been a ham for 45 years, and my wife's been one for 35, so we live in it. I've got a son and a daughter-in-law who are hams.
They're the kids of this group.
So I've been laughing at what y'all have been talking about because I've been there and done that. I remember the having to change the crystals with a eraser or with the other end of the pencil.
Pencil lead, yeah.
Or with the whatever kind of abrasive we could use. Usually toothpaste worked real good. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple of cleansers that worked even better. Take off more at a time.
I use Comet.
Yeah, that worked good.
Comet, yeah.
Comet worked real good.
Yeah.
Just been there, done that. Been enjoying it all my life. I hope I got a lot more of it going, but we're looking forward to continuing on. Go ahead.
So you've got a lot of old military radios that you've collected and, I guess, restored?
Well, some I've restored, some I haven't.
Yeah,
but
you know,
I've got a lot of them, yeah.
You know, I think that was probably back in the early 50s, the military surplus radios. That's what got a lot of hams going, wasn't it, Martin? And you remember even, you know, I had a Central 10B or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the first time I think we used a surplus ARC 5 transmitter or something.
It had a VFO. Central Electronics was 25, I think it was. And 25 watts. It was an exciter.
Sideband, yeah.
And it had that
military VFO.
It had an ARC 5 type, looked like a transmitter. Yeah. And they adapted that case and chassis for that Central Electronics SSD.
They had a Central Electronics plate that went right over the front of that military surface and made it look like, just like part of the radio. You know?
We have one of those at the ARL Laboratory Museum.
The nice thing about the old ARC 5, it was designed about 1938. We used them all the way through World War II. There were hundreds of thousands of them. Every B-17 had... for each different frequency band had a separate transmitter and a separate receiver. When one went out, they just yanked that one out, put it in a pot,
right in the rack.
Or if a bullet went through it, right? They just get another one out.
Sure, they'd get another one out. Or if it just, like a lot of stuff did back then, just quit. And they were available, I can remember them, for, $3, $4, $5 a piece in the 50s.
Yeah.
And they were solidly built. They were Collins designed, most of them. And, I mean, they were just there. You didn't have to worry about frequency drift. You didn't have to worry about if you had a general class. All you had to do is use that for your variable frequency oscillator. When you set it, it wasn't going to go anywhere. Of course, nowadays we would complain because it would be a few hertz off one way or the other. But back then, it was solid as a brick.
Indeed.
John, you know, I told you about this guy at the Ham Fest today who has a collection, 170 of those ARC 5s that I want you to buy because I just want one of them.
I'll give you an ARC 5. I don't need to buy 100.
Martin, I'll hook you up. I only have 60 of them.
Oh,
Hey, Martin has got, if you ever get a chance to look in Martin's office, he's got a lot of, not antique, but old radios he's restoring and collects. Oh, okay. I think he buys them all the time. I saw my novice receiver up there last visit. Hey, we got, hey, Martin, we got a guy here that's emailed in. He says he has your MFJ antenna analyzer, and he loves it. That was Stephen in San Angelo, Texas.
Oh, well, thank you, Stephen.
I spent a little time down in San Angelo in the Air Force. And then we got, it looks like Adolph in Willing, West Virginia said hello.
Oh, well, hello, Angela. You know, Tom, I recently had to move out of my office because I had too many of the old radios. But, you know, one of the radios that I have been looking for forever is a Mosley CM1 receiver. That receiver had five tubes in there, the same tube number. And I keep looking for them. And, you know, once in a while they show up, but I'm so cheap I won't pay what they ask for.
If I ever find one, I'll give it to you, Mark.
Okay.
I have a question. Today we were walking through the flea market, and we happened along Martin, and somebody said, what did you pick up here? What did you buy? And he said, he opened the bag, and there was a older Heathkit Keir. Okay, now, you know this guy has in his repertoire and stock some beautiful paddles, beautiful Keirs.
Yes.
And here he is out in the flea market buying this old Heathkit Keir. I've got to ask the question, and that is, why in the world would Martin Jew buy an older Heathkit Keir unless there's got to be a story? I mean, there just has to be.
Well, you know, I just like the old stuff. And the real reason for buying the older Heathkit Keir today at the Huntsville Hamfest was because I had just bought two of the Heathkit Keirs that were much older than the one I bought today. They were so heavy, they had to have tubes in there. I haven't looked at it. And the one I bought today was a lot lighter and had to have something else than tubes in there. But what I was really looking for was a telegraph key, and the telegraph key cost more than the Heathkit electronic key that I could have bought. So I bought the cheaper one.
Ted, let me interject another story about Martin.
Okay.
Some of you around here, if you really, really, really know the answer, don't give it away. But if you don't know the answer, guess. Now here's a guy who could probably get the rig that he wanted, right? What is Martin Jew's favorite transceiver? Well, I had the opportunity to find out what that was because we were having lunch in Starkville, as we often do, and I had traded one transceiver for another one, and he said, if you ever want to get rid of that, let me know, like in case you want an amplifier or something. And with this sly smile, I realized what he was doing, and so I got another one. I figured if Martin really liked that, it must be really good. So I got another one, and I sent it off to the guru of these kind of receivers and had it repainted, the front panel bathed in a special way. This guy cleans it. And in his 40th anniversary of his company, I swapped him a Drake TR-7, as clean as it could be, for one of his ALS 600Ms. Now, I came out the better of the deal financially in terms of what the quality of the price of the product would be. But I got the joy, personally, of giving my friend the rig he always wanted.
So this is Drake TR-7.
The TR-7, but like Frank said, he got the far, far better financial deal, and I ain't going to never do that no more.
Oh, man. What do you say after that?
I don't know. You just have to get to know Martin.
Well, I know the feeling because one of my favorite radio. If I wind up on a rig in the house, generally, it'll be a pair of Drake Twins or a TR4C. I don't know. I just wind up there. There's no explanation for it. So, George Thomas sitting over here giving me a look like I was crazy. So I don't. But I bet he's got some secrets too, like that. If somebody were to really, you know, probe deep enough, you could find out what George's secrets are.
Hey, George, will you explain the new SWR you've come up with?
The new SWR.
Yeah, you know, the squirrel to wire ratio?
Yeah, the squirrel to wire ratio is not running very good on my property right now. Tommy, my partner over at Amateur Logic, has been having squirrel problems with the squirrels gnawing the ropes that hold up his wire antennas. He brought a truckload of them and dumped them in my yard, and they've chewed the coax from my cable television, took out my internet service, and it was quite an ordeal. I'm trying to send them back, but he won't take them. But you were talking earlier about the crystal radio. I want you to know that I built at least three of those when I was a kid, and I agree they don't work. But I do have a Vectronics one that I'm happy to report does work. Of course, I live within like 5 miles of a transmitter now, but when I was a kid, it was like 30 miles away, so I really didn't have a fighting chance with it back then.
Well, you know, if we don't blame ourselves, nothing's going to ever, we can't ever fix anything.
Well, that's true. That's true, but, you know, I tried the oatmeal route, I tried the blued razor blades, everything, but my first one that ever worked is when I was living at a radio station. It was an old station, or had been around for a number of years. They had a house right there at the transmitter site for the engineer to live in because, you know, they'd been around for years. Well, when my son was little, we built a crystal radio together, and it picked up the radio just great.
Sure.
Course, you know,
I think that's cheating, George, putting a crystal radio on at the station.
we were at least 600 feet away from the tower.
Let me tell you something, though. One of the best-sounding air monitors that you can pipe into the console I'll tell you, I've done this before because I just didn't want to have to go through the hassle. I'd run down to the local Radio Shack store and buy one of their cheap crystal radio kits, assemble it with a little springs, you know, that you put the diaphragm, you know, and then hide it somewhere and run the output into the console monitor. And, I mean, it's just as clean as it can be.
And broadbanded, too.
And you can hear every little bit of distortion and anything that's going on. So
it's true.
And there's nothing wrong with that at all, I don't think.
Yeah, that they really work good when you got the power.
Of course, George has been a radio engineer for a good while, has all kinds of experience in broadcasting, you know, and I think that explains some of his erratic behavior at times.
Well, it does. It's the RF.
Yeah. Anyhow, I've got to ask this question now. In the MFJ catalog, how many crystal radio kits do you have? Do you know, or do you have one?
We do have a crystal radio kit. do y'all remember the Quaker oatmeal boxes?
By all means, yep.
Okay. Well, we have a crystal radio kit. Well, I mean, we replace the Quaker oat box with a big piece of PVC pipe, but we still use the piece of wood and the screw, and it's a great experience for kids to wind the coil, and instead of giving them an old rusty razor blade and a piece of pencil lead and a safety pin, we'll give them a 1N34. Germanium diode. I mean, you know, that still puts them back in the 50s, but at least they can get it to work the first time.
You bet. I'm involved with a radio museum in Connecticut, the Vintage Radio and Communications Museum of Connecticut, and one of the activities we have for kids is building a crystal radio set, and we use that same diode and a toilet paper tube as a form, nothing more than it seems to be clothespins and a couple of screws, and the kids construct these very basic crystal radio sets. And because there's so many transmitters in the Hartford area, they always work the first time. And the museum has really, literally made about 1,000 of these things for kids. The kids actually build them, of course.
Wow.
But they put the kits together, and it's a wonderful experience for all.
Oh,
nothing like the magic of a crystal set.
Absolutely. There's magic in radio. Absolutely.
Radio is magic.
Okay, hey, here's a couple people that emailed. Gene Moore, N8YRF. I was trying to see where he's from. Anyway, he said the transmitter is coming in a little weak for 100,000 watt, but he was kidding. He said that he's hearing us just fine here. Let's see. Can you tell it, Ted? I don't know where he is. Maybe I'm overlooking it there.
Well, yeah, this one I retrieved. Holly's been getting them, but this one came to another email address.
And then we got.
And it doesn't say. It says N8YRF. I don't know.
Well, I'm guessing Ohio or somewhere. But then again, you know, nowadays you can have an 8 call be anywhere.
Yeah, looking up on QRZ on the phone here.
Yeah. We've got Kevin. Kevin in Houston, Texas, saying hello. And Bill Jones, W4MAJ in Dixon, Tennessee, is saying hello to
hello.
The
group.
Hello there to you.
Yep.
And
Keith just called in, KK6GLN, out in California. No city. I guess he just in California.
What a QRZ these guys. Got to find out where they find them on the map. You know? Need a spare computer or something here to sit here and look at QRZ.
Oh, this transmitter is awesome.
It does pretty good, yeah.
It's doggone awesome.
And on the weeknights, of course, at 11 o'clock, we run Art Bell. And, boy, I'll tell you, we get some real activity when he's
all right. Nothing like Art Bell.
We have to stay out the transmitter site and shoot down the aliens, or else, it's just...
I think during that show, don't they beam in a little extra energy from space?
I've read articles where they're supposed to be pulling the power out of your radio station, so I don't know. We haven't seemed to have that problem. I think they're just listening, is what they're doing. They're thinking, I don't believe this. Have you ever seen a UFO, Martin? I'm just curious. Have you ever seen one? Or
I have seen a UFO. This was back in the 60s around Vicksburg. Looked up in the sky, UFO.
What did it look like?
A little spot of light. It was moving across the sky.
That subject is a lot more common than what folks realize. It's just all kinds of people see things. And, of course, a lot of things can be explained, But then you look up sometimes and you see something really squirrely and you just get this feeling in your gut. This ain't right,
you're a lot more prone to see UFOs when everybody else is seeing UFOs.
That's true. It's like
come in groups.
Well, it's not just that. I think people don't look up in the sky normally. They just don't pay attention. And then when somebody says, hey, this is going on, then people start looking up thinking, oh, is there really something up there? You really don't know.
I've even seen a UFO, Ted. I think we were probably about the same time as Martin. It was in the 60s. I think I was at a drive-in theater one night, and I looked up in the sky, and here come two lights just really low in the sky coming at us, And I'm thinking, it looks like a car, but I know a car can't be up there. But, there was an Air Force base nearby. It probably was an airplane. All right, who's sending the feedback?
Does anybody have any hearing left?
We're good.
If you'd like Ted to reimburse you for your speakers, just shoot an email in here.
The headphones on, I was like, hello. It's like a hearing test.
I don't think your mic's working now.
Yeah, it's working. It's just everyone's AGC has been driven into saturation from that tone. You can't hear anything now. No, it's amazing. What I found amazing is... is Art Bell's popularity I mean, the stuff that he, I mean, the people that call in, you know for a fact some of them are just putting him on. But he maintains that deadpan, serious sort of thing and talks about just about anything and everything under the sun. So it's, I find that interesting. What is interesting, though, is the fact that shortwave radio, I mean, he's on shortwave, and we have, that the audience has grown so large, it's so huge, following that show, and of course we're doing some music shows, and the ham radio shows, there's an intense interest. So I'm just, that's why we're here. We're here because we're just wanting to take shortwave radio and have fun with it. For so long, I think that shortwave has been kind of one of those things, you tune around and you hear foreign broadcasts, and it gets to be fun to track them down and find out what country they're coming from and all that kind of thing. But then there's an element missing, and that's what we're basically, you know, trying to do. And speaking of that, it's time for a station identification. This is WTWW, Lebanon, Tennessee, United States of America, and we're broadcasting live from Huntsville. And we are at the Embassy Suites. In the lobby with us is a whole group of hams. And, Martin, why don't you take and kind
we
of
We should all identify.
Yeah, identify everybody that's sitting here that you know, and then the ones that you don't, we'll have them identify themselves. How's that sound?
Okay, yeah. Well, I want to say that I have been a fan of Art Bell forever. And when I was younger, I used to listen to him. And he would used to scare my pants off when I was listening to him. I am Martin Jew, K5FLU, and we make toys for ham radio operators. And right over here to my right is Frank. Wait, let me see. Frank, K4FMH, and my good friend from Mississippi, and Bob Allison, one of the world-famous guys from ARRL, WB1, GCM, and then my tank guy, personnel carrier, John Whitten. You tell him your call.
I'm John Whitten. My call is W5JWW. And I live here in Mississippi, or over in Mississippi, too.
And I'm George Thomas. Of course, Martin has been a good friend for a number of years. And so has Frank over there. I'm not sure either one of them will admit to it, but we've known each other for quite a while. I'm a broadcast engineer and a ham. Plus, I have an internet television show we started 10 years ago in October called AmateurLogic.tv. And I'm also a regular host on Ham Nation every week with Bob Howell and Gordon West. And I brought a posse with me. We've got Vince Eubanks over here, N5KQW. Got Wayne Eubanks, KG5RE, and then Tommy Martin, N5ZNO. But one more guy who we couldn't get to come back down here, he's in the room because he's still got jet lag, is our partner Peter Barrett from Melbourne, Australia, VK3PB, wow. Came to Huntsville.
Wow.
He's been on the show with us for 7 or 8 years now. This is the first time we've ever met in person, but because we always get together over Skype. But it's real good to have Peter come and be with us here in Huntsville this year. And this guy sitting beside me right here, he's got his own microphone.
Hey guys, I'm Tom Medlin, W5KUB, and we've been doing web broadcasts of ham radio events like Dayton Ham Fest, Huntsville, for about 14 years now. And we just recently, in the past year, started a ham radio show up every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 0100 UTC on Wednesday. It's a ham radio and shortwave show. I was able to get Ted Randall here to be our co-host on a show with us, and we try to bring in some guests every Tuesday night, and we have a good time. And but, hey, be sure and tune in to our webcast tomorrow for the last day of Huntsville Ham Fest at W5KUB.com, and you might win a prize. We've got about 20 prizes left, and we're going to be hard-pressed to give them out tomorrow. I don't like doing it while we're driving home because it's a little dangerous. So we want to give all the prizes out. So you guys be there, collect the prizes from us tomorrow. And then who we got over here? Who's next?
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to QSO. And what you're listening to is a big old campfire in the lobby of the Embassy Suites in Huntsville, Alabama, that followed the Huntsville Ham Fest. So you'll just have to stay tuned and listen. Now, we're going to get right back to this, and we'll tell you more about it right after this. Here at QSO, we hear success story after success story. We hear excited people telling us they just got their ticket using Ham Test Online. That's right. This is the easiest, most concise, as well as fastest method to get that ticket in your hand. Ham Test Online. No thick books to read, no DVDs, no CDs to wade through, no studying for hours and hours and then forgetting what you studied, and no irrelevant information that you have to wade through in order to get to the things that are really on the test. Ham Test Online. Now, if you've already upgraded to Extra Class and you no longer need the services of Ham Test Online, we want you to think about this. Ham it forward. That's right. Ham it forward. Now, what is that? There's a lot of folks out there that would like to Elmer someone into the hobby, but you're not quite sure how to do it. Don't know if you could really tackle the project. There's folks out there that would like to teach a class of maybe three or four people or maybe larger, but you see that as a real undertaking. Don't know if you can quite handle that. Working with someone and getting them their ham ticket is one of the most satisfying things that you could do as a radio amateur and promote this hobby, moving it forward with new blood. That's why we have Ham It Forward. Now, this is a cooperative effort from Amateur Radio Roundtable, the QSO radio show, and the folks at Ham Test Online. All you have to do is get a subscription for a new prospective ham, and then just follow through with them a little bit and let Ham Test Online take them through the steps and get their ticket painlessly, easy, and fun. Keep this in mind. It's a new program. We're calling it Ham It Forward. We'd love for you to participate in this. Everybody knows someone that they would love to get into the hobby. Give a gift. Give the gift of the ham radio, amateur radio hobby by Ham It Forward. Go to hamtestonline.com. That's hamtestonline.com. Or look on the QSORadioshow.com website.
How about
a very, very selective and very sensitive portable shortwave radio that you can fit in the palm of your hand? That's right. A shortwave radio that's got also a very hot AM section on it, picking up distant AM stations that you wouldn't know were there. An FM receiver that's really nice. An FM stereo built in. The aircraft band, so you can listen to the control tower and the pilots coming in. And also, of course, a very hot shortwave. Shortwave receiver that receives from 2.3 to 26 megahertz continuous with variable audio bandwidth switching. How about also NOAA weather included on this radio? That's right. You can hold it in the palm of your hand. It's not much bigger than a pack of cigarettes. It's called the SkyWave. We've been talking about this. And if you're a shortwave listener, you just can't live without one of these things. 400 memories. It comes with the power adapter, the earbuds. It's got a USB connector on the side for charging batteries, and it'll go 60, 70 hours on a pair of AA batteries. Is this all true? Yes, it is. We've accused Bob Crane of using voodoo to create this radio. Why don't you give the Sea Crane Company a call? But before you do, mention WTWW, and you'll get the free retractable shortwave antenna that you can attach to the radio through a jack on the side and extend the antenna way out. Or you can get the CC Quick Charger, which is a battery charger. It charges AA, AAA, CD, shows you the status of the battery, shuts off automatically when it's fully charged, and you can charge all your USB devices with this thing, including your cell phone. That can be free as well. It depends on what you want. Do you want the antenna or do you want the CC quick charger? All you got to do is mention WTWW. Now, why is that important? Because the folks at C-Crane want to know where the orders are coming from, because they're the ones that's bringing you the Art Bell Show on shortwave. And for them to continue this effort of this wonderful thing of midnight in the desert on a big, powerful shortwave radio station, they just want to know that you're patronizing them by ordering your shortwave radios from them. This Skywave is unbelievable. You can get a hold of the C-Crane Company by dialing 1-800-522-TUNE. That's 1-800-522-TUNE or 1-800-522-8863. It's 1-800-522-8863. And mention WTWW. Or you can simply go to ccrane.com. Here at the QSO Radio Show, we really need to hear from you. Go to our website, simply QSOradioshow.com. That's QSOradioshow.com. And you'll see all the past podcasts up there and other information. But go to the part where it says email Ted and send us an email. And be sure and put on that email, I want to win, because always giving something away. Go to the website. It's simply QSOradioshow.com. And send us an email. And while you're at it, be sure and friend us on Facebook, QSO Radio Show, and follow us on Twitter, QSO Radio Show. And thank you for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the QSO Radio Show, and we're bringing you a playback of a live broadcast we did on WTWW at the Embassy Suites in Huntsville, Alabama. It was a last-minute idea to have an oldies show in the lobby of the Embassy Suites Saturday night following the Ham Fest and just have everyone gather around and tell stories and have a big time. Well, guess what? We didn't get a chance to play any oldies because the stories were just too good. So let's continue. Right now, you don't want to miss a minute of this broadcast from the Huntsville Ham Fest Embassy Suites Saturday night.
Which microphone will fit? This cable here won't go any further, and I'm afraid to pull on it because if I do, I don't know what might happen. You know.
I will. I'm Dent Morris, WB4AUU.
Get him up a little closer. We can't hear.
I'm Dent Morris, WB4AUU from Springfield, Tennessee, and I'm here with my friend from many years ago, childhood, Bill Killebrew from Fairfield, Tennessee, and we're here at the Hamfest. First time I've met Martin today. We got Pete having a good time. Enjoying your show, and Huntsville's a great hamfest.
All righty, got another gentleman. Okay, you just introduced him. Okay, so now, is there anybody left? We got somebody else over here that's sitting and watching. Yes, can we get a mic back here to this young gentleman here?
Oh, there, this is
you got a mic.
Yeah, okay. Got a mic back here. I'm ready to go. My name's David. I'm KG4 WXW. I'm here with Ted, WBAPOM, my brother, KG4 WXX, Miss Holly, KG4 WXV over here. And then sitting next to me is a gentleman who just informed me he is a general class ham radio operator here.
Congratulations.
And I'll let him talk here just a moment. What's your name, sir?
My name is Chris.
And what's your call?
KD8YVJ, Kilo Delta 8 Yankee Victor Juliet.
He knows his phonetics already.
That's pretty good.
So what's your so you're sitting here with a bunch of gentlemen here. What's your favorite frequency to? Are you on HF yet? Let me ask. You are on HF. All right. What frequency are you on, and where can we find you on the radio?
Most of the time, 20 meters. Every now and then, 40. Sometimes I'm at our club station, Whiskey Charlie 8, Voice of America. Most of the time, you'll find me there on Wednesdays.
So is that the museum?
Yes.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we have an amateur radio club there.
Tell us about this museum. I mean, a lot of folks don't know about it, but you'd be a good spokesman.
Well, we live pretty darn close to it. I don't know too much information, but I know we have a radio club there. There's a few old radio equipment there and stuff. So.
A few?
A lot.
I was going to say, I had a pre-tour of that place, but I had a chance to go there several times when VOA was actually running it as a station, and it was extremely, extremely impressive. And they've got now there, as far as I know, they still have a good chunk of a 250,000-watt Continental transmitter, I believe. I believe it's Continental. And, I mean, there's some parts missing. I think they wanted to disable it in case somebody wanted to get on and play Surfing Bird by the Trashman or something. But anyways, but it's really an incredible thing to see. Now, let me ask you this. Did you go directly and get your general ticket, or did you start off as a technician?
Well, I started off as a technician, and then exactly a year later, on the exact same day, I got my general.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Awesome.
So
awesome.
That's really incredible. Now, where did you get the idea to become a ham?
Well, my dad over here, KD8VRX, got his technician.
He's handing you the mic, Dad. He wants you to tell some of the story.
Yes. How I became a ham. I used to do radio. I did JOTA, and I didn't know what's called Jembry on the Air, when I was a scout. And I wanted to do it, but the Elmer, or the person at us at his house, left, and I basically fell out of touch with it till I became involved with Scout with my oldest son here, my youngest son, and then decided that I should maybe do this. And they were saying, well, we always need help with kids, so please, you know, get your ticket. And then I got involved and got the bug, and now here I am, and you know, and totally into the hobby. So go ahead.
So you live close by.
Yes.
The old VOA.
Correct.
Okay. And are you a part of that club?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
We both are members of the club. VOA, as you said, turned into a museum. It was decommissioned in '94, and government, you know, tore down the towers and all the fun stuff, equipment that was there, and the community got together and decided that it was a piece of history that was worth saving. You know, we look at, like, the Liberty Bell and other signs of freedom, and I think a lot of people don't know the history of the Voice of America right there. So it's turning into a museum. We have the Gray Wireless Museum, and it's open right now. It's not fully finished, but it is open part time. I think it's the third Saturday of the month where you can get tours, and it was open today. But, and they give the tours and explain basically what still is Voice of America and what was Voice of America and the importance it played in our freedom.
I'll tell you, they show a film there, and when you sit down and watch this film, you walk away with a completely different understanding of VOA. The other thing is, I remember as a kid listening to The Breakfast Show. Did anybody ever listen to The Breakfast Show?
Yes.
On The Voice of America?
Yes.
What a broadcast. I mean, you talk about some of the most professional people to ever grace radio worked at the Voice of America, but yet a lot of folks in the United States never heard the broadcast, never learned or knew who they were, and that's just that's, you know, that gets on your nerves when you think about it very much.
Yeah.
People like Willis Conover that did the jazz show, just incredible stuff. But it's nice that place has been preserved. I know when I went through it, I was amazed. I think they have one of every kind of radio that's ever been manufactured in that place.
There's.
Am I close?
Yeah, there's a lot of radios. There's also radios made in Germany, because obviously, you know, part of the propaganda was to only get those certain bands or those certain frequencies that you wouldn't get Voice of America. So there's a radio, and I can't remember what it's called, but translated from German to English, it's the People's Radio. And obviously it was tuned to only receive a certain frequency, where obviously Hitler at the time was broadcasting his propaganda. If you wanted bigger radio or a, you know, with wider range, you need to spend a lot more money. And the president, or the president of Voice of America, of the museum, Jack Dominic, says that he sees somebody at least twice a month, pulls up to their driveway, and gets out of the car, and they're usually foreigner, thick accent, Russian and stuff, and said, you know, this is where I learned English. This is where I learned about, you know, as he said, one guy said one time, in Russia, planes never crash. We never lost the man. Everything was always great. Never lost any war or anything, you know, no battles. Everything was just always great. So they would listen to the Voice of America to get a better perspective on really what was happening. So very interesting.
It's interesting to listen to foreign broadcast news. You can hear some really, really interesting things. And but has anybody else in the group here, anybody else ever catch the breakfast show or any of those VOA programs that ran?
I know that one of our Connecticut's own, Ted Hansen, was on the TV station that I worked at. It was Channel 30 in West Hartford. Ted Hansen was the evening broadcaster for the news, and he went over to the VOA. And there were other anchors from our station that went there at the time. And I remember tuning in Ted Hansen and various programs, but VOA was extremely important. Shortwave listening back in the 60s and early 70s, during the Cold War, was just a fantastic experience, and getting the other perspective out there.
Ted, let me interject. We were talking about Art Bell and the rising popularity of Art Bell. You know, Art Bell is a very active ham and has quite a ham station there in Pahrump. A couple of years he was in the Philippines. But let me dovetail that in the U.S., we sort of take radio for granted now because we have such a rich television and multimedia environment. In many parts of the world, radio is still king.
Yes.
I just worked with a missionary from Uganda to help design an audio recording studio. There are two in the country where you can get a choir into, more than one person. And this is a Bible college in Uganda. And I listened to how important radio is there today. So we sort of probably take that for granted here. And I think people like Art Bell is interesting because, you know, late at night is when we kind of mentally wind down, and he rejects very little, as weird as it may sound at times and as scary to Martin as it might be. You know, he has truly an open mind about his talk show. Very unlike the political talk show we hear during most of the daytime.
Very close-minded.
Yeah, very close-minded, where he's very, very open-minded. And I think he's a real icon for amateur radio, who's also on the commercial side, that really brings what the heritage of ham radio is all about in bringing free speech and free listening too many countries. So let's don't forget folks in the underdeveloped world and how important radio really is to them.
Well, that was going to say, that was one of the things that strikes me all the time as we originate programming here on WTWW, and that is we are representing the culture of the United States of America to people all over the world. We're also representing ham radio. And what our interpretation of amateur radio is, you know, and of course, actually, in Part 97, I think it says that one of the purposes of the hobby is to enhance international goodwill.
Yes.
So it behooves all of us to try to do something along that line and not, of course, behave badly and create more problems that way.
You know, and Ted, I'm a flunky with ARL, but we've got somebody from the home office, from at least the lab side. One of the things ARL does is, with the ITU, is help keep things sort of straight, jammers aside, but keep things straight so that this can happen, so that we can get relatively clear frequencies, even though we complain about 40 meters sometimes, that things are not as chaotic as they very well could be. Russian woodpecker aside.
Well, hey, what is your favorite net on 40 meters? What frequency is it on?
My favorite net?
Yeah.
Probably when the Ham Nation group ends up and kind of has the after show. I'm a lurker. Some people like to watch. I like to listen.
See, so, what I was going to say is we were going to apply for that frequency.
Yeah.
And we were going to broadcast right on top of your favorite net.
What? Oh. Yeah. That's fine.
I'm teasing you. How long have you known Martin Jew?
I've been a customer of Martin since 1979.
Well, how long have you known him, like, as a friend, though?
Well, probably we only got to know one another probably, I would say, 2007, 2008, something like that. Somewhere in there, Martin, is that fair? I wandered into MFJ one day, and Martin gave me a tour, which is the opening line to so many people who know Martin. It's how many ham radio manufacturers could you actually get through the front door, and then you happen to run into the president, and he gives you a tour. I know him no place. But I've gotten to know Martin probably maybe 2007, 2008, I think, Martin.
Okay.
I think it's the first tour that you gave me.
No, you're right. But whenever it was that you moved to Atlanta and invited me to speak at one of your things at Georgia Tech.
I guess I probably got to know Martin by moving to Atlanta. I guess that's what he's saying.
The big question I have is, as I speak into Bob's chest here, where he's got the lav mic.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm comfortable with that.
The big question is, do you have any stories you could tell out of school about Martin that would make us all laugh? Nothing too bad, but, you know, something, you know, like he went to a hotel, forgot, you know, his luggage. I mean, something that's funny.
Oh, you know.
Hey.
Hey, I got something here. I mean, let me see. I heard Martin got thrown out of his hotel room when he was first getting started with the college kids and making those circuit boards in his hotel room, and he got thrown out of the hotel.
Well, he did. But now,
the way you
painted that story, people, you know, do the smoke fire principle. Martin and his students got thrown out of a hotel. You know how Martin got thrown out of the hotel? Etching circuit boards in the smell from the acid and too much soldering haze in the air. You know, that was during the day when, you know, haze in the air suggested other things.
Oh, yeah.
That was the haze of money.
Well, let me tell you, that the smell there got Martin thrown out. But, you know, I think it was a blessing for Martin because he was overpaying for that room. Martin, what were you paying for that room, something like 50 cents a day?
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. I overpaid for that room, and you're right, 50 cents a day was way too much.
And he found out that you moved on. Every time Martin moved on, he got a bigger and better place and, you know, did a lot better. And look where he is today.
Martin, and I've had the pleasure of introducing Martin a few times, and I hold Martin and his whole family in very high regard, almost with reverence. And as some of our gentlemen who I think have retired to their room from CQ Magazine have talked about, the Jew family is the prototypical immigrant to America entrepreneurial success. Great-great-grandfather, a laborer on the biggest economic development project that this country's ever known, the Intercontinental Railroad that opened the West to Chicago. And it made the arches golden, and it made Chicago grow. And it made the West Coast a place that the people on Bonanza wanted to go to. That was a joke. Now, that was then. Then settled in the Delta, a very rich, one of the most wealthiest regions of this country at one point in time. You talk about fat cats on Wall Street. The planters of the Delta had Washington on speed dial before the telephone system was created. When they wanted something in Washington, it happened. Martin's family settled there, created a grocery business that was a lifeline to communities. And through education, hard work, Martin and his brother left and went to college, moved up the ladder, through hard knocks and hard work, is the top manufacturer in his industrial class. And to me, that is the story of America.
Amen.
Now, that's not the story you asked for about ha-ha and stuff.
Hey.
Well, now it's Martin's turn.
Yeah. Hey, Frank.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. That was very, very nice. But when I think Frank hosed me in very high esteem is when he brings me a 2-liter bottle of Grey Goose.
Well, you know, Martin, for another Maritron amp, that can be arranged.
Hey, no, I did that before.
But as far as Martin's concerned, Martin's got all kinds of stories about how he can take $1 and turn it into $3. And those other two came out of your pocket, by the way. He still got his in his pocket. It took his 40th year of business before he put the first sign of MFJ Enterprises on the door. The only way you knew that was MFJ is it had K5FLU in the parking spot by the door. And he now has a sign at MFJ, Ameritron, and High Gain. Why? He spent that money on making more money. And a lot of people around MFJ, you know, might complain about how tight the president is. Martin, how many people do you have who've been with you at least 30 years? What percent of your employees?
You want to tell the truth or the lie?
Well, I want you to tell me what you want people to know.
Okay. I'm going to tell the truth, okay? Lots.
Lots.
He has a employee retention level that any major corporation in this country would love to have. He was asked today in a forum a question I haven't heard him be asked. Martin, what's your management secret? And you know what the answer is? I'll let somebody else do it. He turns the job over to people that do the work. Boy, what an innovative idea. Let the people who do the work do the work.
Martin's a very humble guy, too. He, you know, he didn't talk too much about himself or his grandparents. So, Martin, I understood that your grandparents, when they worked on that railroad, what was it, Trans-Pacific, whatever it was called?
Intercontinental.
I heard that they are the ones that drove the Golden Spike in there when the two met. Now, can you confirm that?
Well, you know, all that came from Frank. No, but my great grandfather did help build the Transcontinental Railroad across the U.S. One of the reasons that Frank is one of my very good friends is because he propagates stuff that he says.
Oh, man. Hey, if I'd known you would transmit old junk for a new 811 H amplifier, I'd have traded Martin something years ago, man. Hey, here's a couple of people have emailed us. I've already talked, I think, about Keith KK6GLN out in California, but Michael in Charleston, Illinois, said hello, and we got Andrew way out in Seattle, Washington. Man, you're hitting the West Coast, Ted.
Oh, yeah, we do that at night. Does yeah. Well, you know.
Hey, has anybody ever got in trouble by being a shortwave listener? I got in trouble once. I can remember, and you guys probably remember, we were talking shortwave a minute ago, the shortwave listening, and a few come to mind for me. You know, I used to listen to Radio Moscow, and Radio Havana, Cuba was a good one that we could all hear, you know. And I think, what was it, Ted? HCJB, was that the call down in
Quito, Ecuador?
Quito,
yes.
Ecuador. You know, so that was the kind of ones that I heard the most. I guess, you know, my radio probably wasn't that great, but I heard the most. But, you know, that shortwave listening helped me get my ham license. You know, I went in the Air Force after college, and I had this top secret crypto security clearance, and I was going through school. And then the OSI, I guess it's called OSI or OSC, you know, they're the
CIA
guys in the Air Force. You know, they come, took me out of the vault one day and started asking me questions, said, "We're taking you out of the vault. You can't go back in there. You're under investigation. We hear that you've been in contact with or been listening to Moscow and Havana, Cuba." So that went on for about 2 weeks. They finally talked to all my neighbors, and they figured out I was okay. And they let me back in to finish my crypto school. And so, you know, it kind of almost killed me there for a minute, guys.
Tom, you know, you mentioned that in the OSS, created by Alan Dulles, And then we hear these numbers station. In Alan Dulles' biography, yep. he admits we helped create the number stations because we've used them, and we've used them a lot, and they are still in use for spycraft.
I heard them on WBCQ once.
Really? Oh, me. I wonder how much the government will pay to operate or give us numbers, you know, do a number station. But I don't know. I mean, I've heard of numbers, but they were usually a different kind of numbers. You know, talk about somebody running the numbers and things like that. It wasn't number station. But they are weird. There's a lot of weird stuff on shortwave. Not as much as it used to be, though. But there used to be some really strange things on there. There were these stations where they would just talk. And everything they were saying absolutely made no sense at all. It was like random words. Have you ever heard one of those, Bob?
Yes. I was listening to Radio Moscow once back in about 1988, and I heard these very cryptic sentences. It was supposed to be a broadcast of how to learn English. And the dialogue went like this. Peter is writing letters. The other person would say, how long has Peter been writing letters? Peter has been writing letters about 3 weeks. Mary is going to visit the Capitol. What will Mary be doing at the Capitol? She will be visiting the zoo. And it didn't make any rhyme or reason, this dialogue, but there was some message mixed in with that. Very unusual. I never forgot that.
That's a variant of a number station.
Yes.
That is a variant. And with a one-off pad, the selected words combine to make a message.
Yes. And I was up in a barn in Glastonbury, Connecticut, listening on a 75A4 to that kind of broadcast in the wintertime in a parka. That's where I used to operate my ARC-5s up there. You know, about the ARC-5s, we talked about that earlier. Imagine an ARC-5 transmitter was set up to operate on the ground where it was really hot on the tarmac. It might have been 120 degrees in the fuselage of a B-17, then it would take off and go up to 38,000 feet where it would be 40 below zero. And with no drift, at least not enough drift to cause any problems. Remarkable transmitter.
Want to mention again, our email address is simply email at wtww.us. That's email at wtww.us. And you are listening to WTWW Lebanon, Tennessee, and we are coming to you from the United States of America. And you probably know that from our accents. You know? So, George is sitting over here, and he's just been too quiet. I'm kind of makes me wonder a little bit here. What's going through his mind right now? Maybe did you ever originate one of those number stations on shortwave somewhere?
Not on purpose. No. I was a disc jockey when I was like 16 in high school, and then. The reason I did that is because I just wanted to work at a radio station. That's the only job a 16-year-old could get. But I like going back there and twisting on the knobs and making things work and watching the old tubes glow. And the occasional arc, I don't like the arcs as much as I used to anymore. But we were talking earlier about, and you said you used a crystal radio at some stations. You know, sometimes you wouldn't even need that diode. All you'd need is a piece of wire, and you got a good signal coming in when you're around a high-power transmitter.
Well, I recall pulling in the driveway one time at WTWW. We heard, and the radio in the vehicle was disabled. I mean, it was kaputs, so there was no power going into it. And we heard this voice, and it was going to drive me crazy. I said, "Where is this coming from?" So I was listening on the speakers, and I was trying to figure out if there was something in the dashboard itself or, you know, something going on. And come to find out, it was coming out of a paper cup in the cup holder. Wow. And I really to this day don't know other than the fact that something, as whatever the Coke, Pepsi, whatever product it was in there, as it dried up, something crystallized, probably formed a diode, and there was enough conductivity there for the cup to become a speaker, you know. But that is really weird. I mean, and we've had weirder things.
Where were you just prior to that?
Probably coming from the house, you know.
Hey, George, you said you were a disc jockey. Did you ever have any cryptic, we were talking about cryptic messages here, did you ever have any cryptic messages to your friends out there, girlfriends or anything, you know, kind of secret messages?
Well, most of the cryptic messages that I had during my show came from the teletype machine, because those things were sent over a telephone line. That's how we got the news at the station. There was this old machine back there, like a mechanical typewriter, that was typing out the newscast. We had to read the newscast at the top of every hour because the owner didn't have us on a network, so we had to read our own news. Well, every now and then, there'd be some noise on that telephone line, and it would print out some words that you had never seen before. And try pronouncing those things. Plus, I was there in the 70s during the Vietnam War, and some of those cities are kind of hard for a 16-year-old to pronounce. But probably my biggest claim to fame is there was a big forest fire that happened in the Yosemite Park.
All right.
The boss called up and said, "George, what are they teaching you at that school you're going to?" I didn't know that was, you know, how you spell Yosemite, but that happened a lot. And I wasn't the only one. There were a lot of people my age working there because he didn't want to pay a lot, and so he'd get high school kids to work there. So no cryptic messages other than what accidentally came out of my mouth, or what we call garble, that ended up in the newscast from the teletype wire.
All right, let me get these names out real quick. We got James Bohemia in Bohemia, New York. Hello to Martin. Oh, where'd Martin go? I lost Martin. I thought maybe he went to get another, you know, whatever that is he's having a good time with. Okay.
I want what he has.
Yeah. So Bohemia, New York. We'll tell Martin when he get back. He's been using his equipment for 20 years. We got Patrick up in Cincinnati, Ohio. We got Mario in Coban, Guatemala. And
right.
We got Nigel over in the UK. So, man, you're hitting it everywhere tonight.
I was going to say, though, Martin is gone, but let me just say this. You know, we hear, I mean, so much about the American economy. And people say the economy's bad. Others people say, well, the economy's doing real well. But the thing that Martin has achieved is this. He has achieved putting out products that are, I guess I want to say, reasonably priced. They are useful to the ham radio industry and to hams. And yet he still is able to make a profit. And the thing of it is, if he didn't make that profit, he wouldn't be there, and we wouldn't have the MFJ antenna analyzer, and we wouldn't have all these other things that he makes.
Well, there are a lot of products that we would no longer have. You know, he's bought up a number of companies that otherwise would have been gone by now, like high-gain antennas, Cushcraft antennas, Ameritron amplifiers, Vectronics, Mirage amplifiers.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's helped keep a lot of these older companies still going, still able to get parts for them, get product serviced. And if you look at his catalog, gee whiz, I mean, he doesn't just have one of something in there. He's got probably the least that you could get by with for a particular product, all the way up through the most elaborate that you could imagine. He's got something to hit every ham's budget there. And there's just a lot of things that he manufactures that otherwise we couldn't get. You know, we'd just be out of luck.
Well, what's amazing is I remember, I don't know how far back I go with this, but I remember the first thing I ever purchased was his little CW filter. You know, and I mean, it had been advertised in a magazine or something. I saw it, and I had the rig I had at that time, I think, was a TR-3, a Drake TR-3.
I had one of those once, yep.
Yeah, and I did not have the finances at that point in time to buy a crystal, and I don't even know, would the TR-3 accommodate a CW filter.
I don't think it did. I just remember it drifted a lot.
Well, anyways, I bought the MFJ CW filter, and then I wired it into the audio chain of the radio. So when I flipped it in, I could, you know, it was in the circuit on the speaker, and I was absolutely amazed because everybody said, "Well, you know, those audio filters, they ring and they're miserable to listen to," and all that. Not that one. No, that was a real pleasant, very pleasant. And I think that was the first product.
That was the first product that Ted. I've been talking to Martin about that. First product was that CW filter. He's got it in a little glass show there in his office or in his hallway. And you know, he had college kids putting those together. They would solder it and put it together. I think he was paying them something like 25 cents per board to put those together. And you were one of his first customers, probably.
I've talked to Martin about that before, and it may bear repeating again here, and that is the fact that I remember seeing, and I don't know where I saw this thing. I don't know if it was like an ad. Maybe it was an ad in one of the magazines, you know, and I just saw this CW filter, and I knew I couldn't afford the regular crystal filter, and I can't remember the old TR3 if it would accommodate a crystal filter. So, anyways, I ordered this little box, and everybody said, "Well, you'll be sorry because these things ring like crazy. It'll drive you nuts." And I wired it right into the audio chain of the TR3, and it was beautiful. I mean, it was so narrow. The problem I had was I was not proficient enough at CW to filter the signals in my head. I couldn't, you know, if there were two guys in there, you know, and one tone was higher than the other tone, and then one way down here a little further, I would hear all three of them at once, and it was like, oh, man, this is, you know, just lose your marbles here. So that CW filter, I'd flip it all the way down to 80 hertz, you know, and tune carefully, and I'd find that spot where you were right in the middle, and then it was perfect copy, absolutely perfect copy, and you didn't have to put up with all that stuff. But that was the first thing I had ever come in contact with. It was,
well, Ted, you know, just right after I got back from the restroom, and I heard Ted start talking about the CW filter, I just couldn't help but just come back in and get into the conversation. And I always love it when you talk about the CW filter, because that's what got us started in everything. And I appreciate you getting me on here so I can talk not just about the CW filter. Can I put a commercial here in?
Go ahead, yes.
I'm just kidding.
No, George is nice. Keeping our commercial log right now, so you can go right ahead.
Yeah, you're D1.
Oh, yeah, okay. you know, if you will compare $159.95 to what that was worth back when we first started, you will see that it was about a tenth of what it was back then. But for that, you can get a totally, fully automatic antenna tuner that's totally plug and play, just like the filter, that CW filter that we started with. In other words, for what you paid for the CW filter that we had when we started, you can get a fully automatic antenna tuner that that you would not ever know that was there. Totally transparent. You can start, you can connect an antenna to it and start transmitting. And it would, and all you would ever know is that your SWR was low, the MFJ 939. Is that enough?
Oh, there you go. Now what does that thing sell for again?
The what now?
What does it sell for again?
$159.95, and the model number, MFJ 939, one cable. You plug it from your radio into the antenna tuner. That's all you have to do. You don't even have to plug power into it. It's got 20,000 memories, and it's super fast. All you do is to tune to the frequency you want to talk to, and then you transmit, and the SWR is 1-to-1, totally low, and you don't even know it's there, completely transparent. Anyway, that's the commercial break.
And it's fast, too. My friend Tommy is using one of those, and he was bragging on how fast it tuned. That you didn't even realize that you needed tuning, and it's already done.
And let me ask you this, Martin. How much, what's the power level on this thing?
What level? The power level is a full real 200 watts. It's got real relays in it. You know, it's not a marginal power level, but it will handle any transceiver above 200 watts. I mean, it's a real tuner.
You know, and is it compatible with all types of radios? Could you use
all
it?
Types of radio? If you have one of the real popular ICOM, Kenwood, Yaesu, plug and play one cable. But even if you don't have that, if you have one of the older ones, or one that is not one cable compatible, what it does is it senses the frequency, and it measures the impedance, and it just automatically tunes it for you. Now, if you have one of the real popular radios, ICOM, Kenwood, and Yaesu, it reads data from the radio and instantly tunes it. But if you don't have that, it will still instantly tune it after it tunes it one time and remembers and learns the way that you operate. And so it works for all radios. It doesn't matter. Really old radios to modern radios, it automatically tunes for you. For $159.95.
I've had my hands on one of those, you know.
Say that again?
I said I've had my hands on one of those.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Hint, hint.
Hey, Bob, you know what?
Yeah.
Man, you're my best friend now.
Right. Now I'm totally neutral and unbiased.
Well, you know, for a while there, though, what I was running into is a friend of mine had an Elenco DX70 and the, what is it, EDX2, I think is the antenna, the tuner that went with that radio. Then someone else had an ICOM 706 Mark II G something, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And there was an antenna tuner that worked with that one. And I've always asked the question because it just bugged me. I said, well, why wouldn't the ICOM tuner work with the Elenco and the Elenco work with the ICOM? Okay. It seems like they should. I was told they do not. So the most logical thing to do is, instead of getting the tuner that belongs with the radio, is to get Martin's tuner. Because then later, if you sell that radio, if at least you've got a tuner that's going to work with whatever radio you buy later on. I don't know. So there, how you like that? Now, that's another part of a commercial number two.
Ted, you are now my number one best friend.
Well, hey, Martin, you got another best friend here to send an email in. Wendell from Golden, Colorado, said he has one of your large MFJ meters. So I think a lot of people like those big meters. We got David in New York. Jeffrey, Helena, Missouri. Now, I'm from Tennessee now. Did I pronounce that right? Missouri?
Some people say Missouri.
Missouri?
Yeah.
Missouri?
The people in Missouri say Missouri.
Missouri says Missouri. Okay, but anyway, that's Jeffrey. Anyway, he's in Helena, Missouri or Missouri. And we got Marcus down in Dallas, Texas.
Wow.
Hello, everybody.
I mean, you know, Tom, you know, I have so many friends from all over the country. Thank you very much for those comments.
Well, we got a lot of folks emailing. Once again, email at WTWW.us. That's email at WTWW.us. And we've got another gentleman here that just walked up is joining us, which this is something you'll be looking forward to. And that's Mr. Bob Heil.
How you doing?
So why don't you say hello to everybody?
Get Ray.
A good deep breath and get ready to catch a wave.
Nice to be here, Ted. Everything going good?
Oh, yeah. We're getting a lot of email from just everywhere under the sun.
Okay.
And we're discussing a whole lot of stuff about Martin here, and he's been having fun. We're all having fun, Bob and George and Tom. We're just we're having a big time. So
good
welcome
deal.
On into the discussion.
And you got the big power knob turned up, right?
Yeah.
That's great.
So, these microphones, you may want to talk a little closer into.
Yeah, that's right.
Here I am telling Bob Heil how to talk into his microphone. It's like
I just got back. I've been out eating. Isn't that what you do at night, right? Yep. Oh, yep. We've been having a good time. But I thought I'd come down and see if you guys are alive, well, and kicking, and you are.
We're... Now I'm getting something here, and I know what it is. It's that microphone. And I don't know how to turn him down.
No, I got my hand over that.
Okay, yeah, but it's making this noise.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Sounds like a washing machine or something going. I've got to do a load of clothes while we're out
there. No reflection on Bob Heil microphones. I'm on a separate lavalier.
I was going to say, today... one thing I noticed about the Hamfest, we were just looking around, and I commented on it, and that is, I see a lot of younger faces, a lot of younger people walking around. Have you
absolutely.
Not noticed?
Yeah.
What do you think's causing that?
Well, Huntsville's been kind of a center point for bringing new hams into it because they've always sponsored or helped sponsor the Young Ham Award each year, and I think that they really are out. Reaching out for the young crowd, and more so than I see other ham fests. Everybody claims to do it, but they actually are doing something about it each year. So, yeah,
well,
I see that.
The thing that's really cool is what we're doing here on a 100-kilowatt shortwave station, just having fun, just kicks our shoes off here, and just talking about anything that comes to mind. The other thing is the amount of promotion that's going on for ham radio. Now, like Bob with Ham Nation right now, there's no telling how many people are being introduced to the hobby and finding the hobby through this Ham Nation outreach that he's got going. And George, of course, with the smoke and solder part of it, you know, and all the different features that you have. I was talking today to... my brain is gone. I was talking today about the new amateur radio news line, and when I say new, the rebirth of it, the segment that's on with Don Wilbanks is on with you guys. And I commented today, I think amateur radio news line has been one of the best productions in ham radio that has ever hit the air. Now, we air it on WTWW, I think about four times a week it airs, you know, so... It's well worth the listen. But I think that we're seeing now also, I think we're seeing things that reach out and grab radio amateurs and literally, you know, ignite the fire inside of them to get into the hobby,
sure.
You know. And I look at Tom here. Tom, I don't know how many times. I mean, Tom has been at every ham fest between Huntsville and Dayton carrying the video, walking around with that cart and showing, the flea market, you know, areas. You know, I remember watching it on TV and saying to myself, oh, I wish I was there. I need one of those, you know. And of course, you know, you couldn't do it. So what do you think about all this, Bob? I mean,
well, it's all part of the new generation of hams. It's and I have a lot of people always tell me, oh, the Internet killed ham radio. The Internet helped ham radio because now you get – the people that are involved in the Internet looking at Amateur Logic, finding Tom's podcast, finding you guys, and they're on their computer, but all of a sudden they see all of these connections. I think it's great because it has brought people into the hobby. In today alone, I've had at least a dozen guys come to me, and because of Ham Nation, because of Amateur Logic, they mentioned that a couple of different guys, because of all that, they got their license. and that's just wonderful. I had two people come in, got their, I guess they're testing here today, and they had gotten their license, and both of them were interested.
Well, that's all the time we've got this week for this broadcast of QSO. Now, you're going to want to hear the rest of this special broadcast from Huntsville, Alabama, and it'll be coming up next week as part two of the lobby broadcast. And once again, just imagine in your head a big old campfire in the lobby of the Embassy Suites in Huntsville, Alabama, Saturday night after the Ham Fest. And that's what you've been listening to, everybody having a lot of fun. We'll continue next week, same time, same station, right here on QSO.